Hello, and welcome to the ISA Audio Library. This is program number 403 in the series. The title is Relationships. This conversation with Ole was recorded at Studio One in Chicago. Ole asked me to be sure to tell everyone listening that working on ourselves can be rewarding and fun. So please have a good time of it while you listen. To receive this information as easily as possible, it is suggested that you listen in a quiet, undisturbed place, such as your home or your car. You can, of course, play the programs often and whenever needed. I thought that possibly we could start with romantic relationships, either married ones or whatever. It seems to be one of the most difficult problems that people have to deal with in their lives is relationships.
When we talk about romantic relationships, I think that we need to first talk about where relationships begin. We have the notion that relationships begin with some other person. But the relationship that is necessary to have established with some clarity is the relationship that I have with myself. Most people don't ever established a harmonious, congenial relationship with themselves. And then they go out, this fragmented human being, then goes out and falls in love. That's usually what we talk about in romantic relationships. Goes out and falls in love with a person of the complementary sex, usually. I mean, it could also be a relationship with a person of the same sex. But let's talk about relationships between a man and a woman. So here's this fragmented person who doesn't experience him or herself as fragmented, being in a relationship with another fragmented person who doesn't experience him or herself as fragmented. And then the fragmentation begins to show up, very much like you and I don't see our own eyeballs, we don't see the way our hair is, and we don't see the pimple on our forehead or whatever. And then if we begin to spend time around mirrors, these blemishes will show up. Now, usually we don't smash the mirror because it shows the blemishes. In relationships, it appears that we blast the other person. That's usually what happens.
In the relationships I had, the part of me that I can recognize now after working with ISA a little bit is the part of me that wasn't complete. I had a relationship thinking that that other part of me would be fulfilled. And in my partner, the part I wasn't getting, I tried to fix my partner. And I don't mean tried. To fix my partner to adjust to what I expected from them. And people are not real willing to be changed. I know I'm not. I wanted her to change. And she wouldn't, and of course I resented it, and then it oftentimes fell apart, more often than not. This is about fixing the other person to get what we need over here, where the need that we're looking for really has oftentimes not to do at all with the other person. It has something to do with going on in here. Was that what you were talking about?
Yeah. See, when we look in the mirror, we see the faults, the shortcomings, the blemishes. And then we want to change the blemishes. That is, we want to paint over the mirror in a way. We want somehow the external reality to adjust so that those shortcomings don't show up. And the way we do that is to make our mate, the person that we are in a relationship with, we make it very apparent that they need to change. And you're quite correct. In working on myself, it's very real for me that it is complex to change my habits or patterns. It's like it's difficult to change the lens, the way I perceive things. It's very difficult. It's not like we have inside our brain a few variations on the theme and we get replacement parts when we get born, so we can take out one and put in another one, and then things turn up in technicolor that before used to be black and white. That's not the way that we can do it. So when these shortcomings turn up, we want to change the other person as if the other person could in fact change. It never happens. What happens instead is that we begin to go out of communication. I mean, we build up resentment and we build up frustration, which is natural given the way that we are. That's natural. That's the way that we do it. It's not right, you know, right in the sense that it would work. It isn't. It doesn't work. So in your own case, in the relationships that you have had, you have put in a very honorable fight to change the women in your life and have failed each time and never learned the lesson. I suspect you are still struggling to change the next one who may turn up in your life. Relationships begin with the relationship with myself. The extent to which I have harmony in myself, there is the possibility. Now, that does not guarantee that there's going to be harmony with the person that I'm with, because the person that I'm with may not be in harmony. So there are no guarantees like that. And it cannot happen until I'm willing to take responsibility for the fragmentation in myself. It cannot happen. Some workable relationships can still be created. I mean, we can make a compromise. I mean, we can make a deal. The way we make deals is that I say to you, this is what I need in order for me to know that it is safe to be me around you. I need you to be willing to work in the direction of satisfying this, because this somehow is assuring. That's part of my makeup. That works for me. I may be one of these particular persons about being on time. I may be one of those people who are prudent about money, who does not want to be wasteful. And I may be one of those people who think that buying fashions is not a conscious way of manifesting my life. So let's take this about being on time, because it's a struggle that people have. It could also be that I'm one of these people who always put my clothes away and always hang it up neatly. And I am lucky enough to come into a relationship with a person who does not. So I'm one of those people who always is on time, you know, with some rare exception, some emergency that happens. But consistently, I'm on time. And I then get into a relationship with a person who thinks being on time is not a significant issue. As a matter of fact, it doesn't have any relevance. So now I have a great opportunity. And so has the mate that I'm with. She, in my particular case, it would be a woman. I would then say to my spouse, listen, you know, it's really important that you show up on time. Now, if we are in a relationship and wanting the relationship to work, and we take something simple like that, like being on time, you may be one of these people who think that that is not very important. That thought in itself is not very important, right? To think that being on time is not very important, that thought in itself is not very important. So it should be possible for you to make a gesture in the direction of me by saying, sweetheart, I really understand that what is important for you is to be on time. And what is important for you that I do is that I also be on time. So I'm going to strive in the direction of being on time. Then do it. Yes.
The thought I have about that is that sounds like one of your rules. Like, you know, I want to live my life on time. So that's how I see it. Okay. Then you say to your partner, okay, what's good for you, that's what it sounded like now, I'm making it up a little bit. What's good for you to be on time, because I know what works for me. I know the benefits of it and so on and so forth. So that's what I want you to do, because I think that's the way to do it. It sounds like one of your conditions. Mm-hmm. Then the question arises, well, what if she doesn't? Is that okay with you or not okay with you? It's just a preference, or is it a demand, or is it a law? Because it sounds like an imperative for you, for someone to have a relationship with you, that they have to be on time. Of course, they probably know that going into the relationship, knowing you. But the point is, you see, it sounds like there's no options. There are no options to not be on. Well, I prefer not to be on time. Is that okay with you? No, it's not. Then, conflict.
Yeah.
What about accepting the fact that this other person isn't on time and you are on time? Is this issue of acceptance? And how is it for you when that other person isn't on time? I hesitate to ask.
That's very good. I'm making a proposition, and I'm not laying down a law. I'm talking about a possibility. I'm talking about making compromises. We take the issue about being on time. I make a suggestion. What I would like for you to do is to be on time. That would show me that you are moving in the direction of supporting the relationship in a way that I can see it. It's not the right thing to do, perhaps, although I'd say that being on time has something to do with accountability and integrity and congruency. So in this issue, I don't have a lot of problems with it. And I'm saying it in the spirit of it being a suggestion. Now, then you may say, all right, I'll make a deal with you. If you want me to be on time, which makes sense, then I want to have the right to buy a new blouse or a pair of slacks every week. So we can make a deal. Now, when I'm talking about this in the spirit of making compromises like that, I'm talking about two people who are not working on themselves or not consciously working on themselves. Because there are certain principles. I think that the principles are fairly readily identified if the people are working on themselves. There is something about congruency. There's something about living a life with harmony. Now, then, depending on the amount of information we have, we can make further and further distinctions about it. So being on time, for instance, is a very easy thing because it has to do with telling the truth. If I say to you, I'll be there at 8, well, the only right time is 8. Anything other than that is not 8. So that's easy. So if you and I say that we want to live our lives in harmony, I'm working on me, and you say to me that you're working on you, then we make deals where it is congruent, that it somehow fits into this overall picture that has to do with living life with integrity, harmony, congruency. If we talk about being on time, and that is my rule, and you say to me, I'm not going to be on time, well, it's possible for me to say, all right, well, I'll accept that, so that whenever I say to you, let's have lunch at 12, I know that that could mean anywhere from a quarter to 12 to 1:30. And if it is real extreme, it could mean, if I say, let's have lunch on Tuesday, let's meet at 12, it could mean any day of the week, sort of any time between a quarter to 12 and 1:30. So I could hang out in front of that restaurant for the next week or two, you know, depending on how far you stretch it, and wait for you to show up. Now, if it is worth it to me, and that's the way that I want to live my life, I suppose that that is pretty all right. It would mean that I would not make very many luncheon appointments with you.
One thing, if you don't mind, there's still, going back a little bit, about 2-3 minutes here, there's still a question that pops up in my mind about creating a spirit of willingness, of wanting to support the other person and not creating, you know, like resentment or resistance, like creating no resistance or less resistance, if that's the way to look at it. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not clear about the way that you set it up, or were you saying that's the way that some people set it up, like it's a trade arrangement. If I'm on time, then you can buy a blouse. And then if I'm not on time, you can't buy a blouse. Well, or I mean, whatever it is, it sounds like a trade thing. It sounds like a kind of a like a constitution for the marriage or for the relationship, as opposed to creating simply a willingness, a wanting to be on time for the benefits of it. I'm not sure what you're talking about, a trade deal, or are you talking about creating an atmosphere of willingness? This is what I would like because it works for me. And this, if this is what you want, you can have that, and so on and so forth. I'm still a little confused about how it's set up.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. I think that it is possible to have a relationship set up as a trade arrangement. I think that that is possible. You cook me dinner, and I go and provide food for the table.
Are those agreements, though? Ground rules?
I think that it is underlying understanding. It's not really like something that people set up. I don't think that that is set up very consciously by people. It is not the ideal either, Kirk. I think that relationships has to do with creating a larger possibility for working on ourselves. I think that the relationships ideally suited for me as an individual, not me personally, me as an individual, ideally suited to discover things about myself. I will only see things about myself in the light of the work that I do on myself. Like, I cannot trust, when I look in the mirror of my spouse, or my friends, or my colleagues, I cannot trust that that mirror reflects accurately back to me what it is that's going on with me. I cannot trust that. Have you been in these funny houses where you look in the mirror and suddenly your body is 10 feet long and it's thin and as a matchstick? Well, this is true about people too. That's one of the problems. The second problem is that my particular lens, the way that I perceive reality, may be one of those lenses where the people, when I look at them, look 10 feet tall, thin as a matchstick. But of course, I wouldn't know that.
That's the way you see it, you mean?
Yeah, that's just the way that I see it. I don't know that I am not in touch with reality at all. I don't know that. So when I talk about relationships, when we talk tonight about relationships, I talk about two people who are working on themselves. And out of that, they enter into some agreement that we are willing. We have the willingness to make our life together, our journey together, an expanded experience in being together. So if I'm being with you, I have a greater opportunity to see myself. And in you being with me, you have a greater opportunity to see yourself. That is, little by little, we adjust our lenses. So as I work on myself, the mirroring effect that I have becomes more clear. And as you work on yourself, the mirroring effect for me that you have is more clear. So when we talk about it like that, then in making agreements about time, it is not my rule. I am pulling out of the box of principles, the underpinnings in what holds our universe together in some way. I am drawing out of that box and say, listen, here are one of the principles that I accidentally came across in my life. It works. When I say, well, I can ask you, does it work? You make an appointment for me to be at lunch with you at 12 o'clock. And when you get there one of those times at 12 o'clock and I'm there, does it work? It's not hard for you to imagine. You can just make up in your mind, all right, I have a date with you at 12 at some restaurant. You can do it all by yourself, right? You just imagine that you have a date with me at 12, and then you go there to the restaurant at 12. You never tell me anything about it, so I'm not there. And then you see what it is like if I'm not on time. And then you see whether or not it works. So we can experiment with the rules, right, or with the principles, and see whether or not they work for us. If they work, well, great, then we make adjustments and we support each other. If they don't work, well, then we draw out of the reality of our experience and we can say, well, listen here, I went to, and that is, of course, exactly what's going to happen. I experimented with it just the way that you said. And I made up in my mind that I was going to meet you at 12 o'clock at such and such a restaurant, and I never told you about it. I went there, and you know what happened? I ran into an old friend who owed me some money, and he gave me that check for $4,000 that I've been, you know, so it's... Yeah. You know how it is? Mm-hmm. Well, we have to experiment with it three or four times, and it won't be long before we realize that...
It works.
It works to be on time. Yes, Wanda.
I have a relationship where that's where we come from. We work on ourselves. And then what seems to happen is we start walking down the same path together, and then some issue comes up that offers us an opportunity to work on ourselves. And then what happens sometimes is that it's an issue that is painful or whatever, and I seem to get stuck. Mm-hmm. And all of the agreements that I make or the trade arrangements or whatever go out the window.
That's right.
At that point. And what I see a lot is that the relationship stops at that point, and then we struggle with the issue. And then all of a sudden it looks like the issue becomes larger than the two people. Mm-hmm. Is there some bridge, like when that happens a lot and it is stuck and the partner does not see what it is that they're not seeing, is there some way in which that can be bridged so that they can become receptive to hearing what it is that they need to work on?
Yeah, theoretically, that's real possible to come up with some formula where that's going to work. The problem is that when we engage in battle, all the standards go out. Now there are no standards. I think that if you look back at some disagreement that you have had in your relationship, you will see that even if I had a great idea, that would be the last thing that you would want to use when you're in the middle of the battle. The last thing. It doesn't matter that it makes perfect sense tonight. It doesn't matter. You say to yourself, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. I'm going to use that next time. Then you think about it again 3 years later after innumerable arguments where you never used it. I think that whenever there is issues where the issue is real, but there is a real argument, the best thing to do is to put down the weapons and find a referee.
I think that society puts it out there that love is the way.
Yeah.
And that as long as you remember that you love the other person, mm-hmm. that when you get to that place of being stuck, that that love will form a bridge. And that from that you can compromise whatever you need to.
Yeah. I think that we should talk a little bit about love.
Okay.
Now, most people have the idea that love is something that we are the effect of. Or love is some quality that will do something. That's not my experience of love at all. It is true that we fall in love. You know, some of this magical thing happens where we meet somebody and that person can't be wrong. I mean, everything is right. Usually it lasts, you know, for a day or two, and then it's over with. And sometimes it lasts. And as a matter of fact, for some people, it lasts the whole lifetime. For the people that it lasts their whole lifetime, they work at it. And most of us think that love is something that we are at the effect of and that we don't have to do anything for. And love, somehow, it's a magical drug that's going to make the problems go away. I think that love is an opportunity. It's like a channel through which to give. And that channel dries up unless it is continuously nurtured. What is it that happens when you love somebody? Well, what happens is that you want to bring them flowers, you want to bring them little love notes, you want to cook them food, you want to take them out, you want to, you know, all these things. It seems to come with the territory that when you are in love, that's the kind of a person you become. I mean, you may even write your mother a note, which you haven't done for 13 years. And suddenly, because you're in love, you feel so inspired and so generous and so kind and so wonderful that you're willing to do anything. I think that that feeling, that opportunity, that channel stays open by our willingness to continue to operate in that fashion. And what most people do is that they begin to feel that it's not there. And then the first thing we do is to blame our partner, you don't love me. What's true is that we have stopped being loving. That is, being generous, being giving, being kind, being accepting, being, you know, nurturing and what have you. Love, I think, is it's sort of an opportunity that exists that we are able to create from time to time in our lives. And for the most part, we never nurture it in such a way that it lives. It's like a little dimension within ourselves, a little seed that begins to grow, and then it doesn't get nurtured. Love gets nurtured by giving. We think that love gets nurtured by receiving. Love gets nurtured by giving. It's like we want to take from the plant all the time instead of giving to the plant. It is true, if you are in a framework where you are loving, that is, you come from that generosity of spirit, or you come from the discipline of giving, there's a willingness to be giving. I think that most of the arguments that occur amongst people will never occur. Because when you're coming from that spirit of giving, the argument doesn't exist. The argument is usually about what I don't get. If my issue is about giving, then I don't have that problem. The argument usually comes from what you are not doing. When I come from the spirit of giving, that doesn't exist. So it is true, and this is one of the fallacies of truth. It is true that love will carry you through everything, and what's also true is that most people are not in love. Yes, Kirk?
In my experience, it seems like most people aren't aware of those ideas that love starts with us, not with somebody else. That kind of thing, that there's another whole possibility out there. Would you agree with that?
In our society, I think that we have forgotten. Maybe it never existed as a possibility. I rather suspect that that's the truth, that relationships were formed in the past on the basis of need. There was a function. It was a functional arrangement, not so much the kind of relationships where we have a choice today. We do have a choice. We have a choice in experimenting with it and having one relationship. And if that one doesn't work, well, we can disengage from that relationship and then have another one. And the relationship is not based on function in the way that it used to be 200 years ago and from then backwards, where each member in the family had a role. I mean, the women bore children and they took care of the houses usually. And the men worked in the fields or were hunters or whatever and provided food. And it was a real practical arrangement. Somebody has to cook the food while I'm out hunting. And there wasn't enough time for me to do all the things, so I had to have somebody to help me, and that was usually a woman. I mean, in my case, if I wanted to have children that could take care of me when I got older, well, I had to have a woman so I could have children, but it wasn't so much about love. Or the kind of choosing relationships that we have the opportunity to engage in or be part of today. And I don't think that we have any idea of how to do it today. If we now look at how can we use relationships today, how can we continue that practical functionality that relationships used to have, however, not now based on survival. The game is no longer about survival. The game is about consciousness. How do we become more conscious? And how do relationships fit into that? Well, relationships fit into that perfectly. We need, in order to see ourselves, we need someone that could be in a relationship. Certainly that would be a practical way of utilizing relationships. We need someone to assist us in seeing ourselves. Like you can't see your own eyeballs. And you say, well, that's not important. But I want to use it as an image because we cannot see ourselves. That essential part of who we are does not show up for ourselves. It shows up in a relationship to something. And it shows up most often in relationship to another human being. Why that is so is that although that my personality, the flaws in the way that I have made up that something, which is called me as a human being, that something will show up in my relationship to a dog. But the dog won't give me any feedback. You know, I can't say, Rufus, what do you think of that? So I get very impatient and I kick Rufus, and what does Rufus do? Pees on the floor. So that doesn't give me a whole bunch of information about myself. It might give me some information about myself if I really know a lot about myself and about what that exchange demonstrated about me. But usually I blame Rufus. So not only did I lose my temper and kicked Rufus, now Rufus has peed on the floor so he gets kicked again. You know, that doesn't show up a lot. With a mate, it's different. They can talk back. So we have an opportunity to learn something about ourselves. What is unfortunate when we talk about relationships and the objections that we have about the type of conversation that we have right here is that we experience mostly relationships as conflicts. We talk about the opposite sex. We talk about our opponent. And that's often the way that we experience relationships, that it is someone that we are in conflict with. We don't utilize the opportunity relationship to learn about ourselves. We want to change our partner. Well, of course, if we were successful in changing our partner, and certainly men have been doing that a lot with women, or at least attempted to do that, this is showing up more and more as we become more aware of ourselves. We also become aware of, collectively as a society, about relationships, and we see what is showing up is that a lot of men are abusing women. What it really shows is that when I see something about myself, and I'm that kind of a man, I'm likely to beat you up if you're a woman, because I don't like what it is that I see. We need to get beyond that and then begin to utilize each other as mirrors. That is, I can learn something about the way that I deal with myself by seeing the effect that it has on you when I deal with you. I can see something of myself. That's not the way that we use relationships. And that's what my intent with this tape is, that we begin to look together at how is it that a relationship can be used as a tool to show me something about myself. How can I use the relationship that I have with my spouse to see me? It has to be a two-way thing. It has to begin with two people who are willing to work on themselves. And I suspect we will have to talk a little bit about what does that mean. What does it mean that we work on ourselves? Most people think that that means that we work ourselves over. That is, we blame ourselves, we criticize ourselves. What do I mean by working on myself? I don't know that we need to talk about the reason why it is that we need relationships. I think that we come most often from it's so difficult to be with ourselves that we need our better half. We need another thing in our lives that is going to complement our lives. So somehow or another, we fall in love. And statistically, the people who fall in love and get married, they live happily ever after for about 3 weeks. For some of them, it's 6 months. And for some who are really willing to struggle, it's 3 years. 50% of them get divorced. Now, why do they get divorced? What I think happens in relationships is that in a relationship, we have the opportunity to do something which we call working on ourselves. And working on ourselves is to develop more of the ideal that secretly we know that we would like to be, but which we can't manifest. That is, we like to be full of vitality. We like to have bodies that really work. We like to be generous and kind and spirit and heart. We want to be productive and efficient, all of those things, all of those ideals. And for each individual, they're a little bit different, and each one of us know what it is for ourselves. Well, in a relationship, we have an opportunity to work on that. What happens after we have the passion and the lust and the being in love begins to fade? Our shortcomings begin to show up. And we immediately blame our partner. I'm sure that each one of you have had a relationship where you realized that you were right and your partner was wrong. And the partner needed to change. And that was a great idea. The only problem with it was that your partner had the exact same idea that they wanted you to change. So you begin to work each other over. It's that you're not working on yourself, you're working on each other. And as we all know and have all experienced, it's very difficult to get the other person to change, because in the midst of me wanting her to change, she is busily working on changing me. So I don't hear what she's saying because I'm busy telling her what it is that she needs to do, and she's not hearing me because she's telling me what I need to do. So in our society, there's a stalemate, and in our society, 50% of us give up. That is, after period of time when we have done it for a while and it has not produced any result and we're very unhappy and like that, we get divorced. So that takes care of 50%. The other 50%, I think, come up with a compromise. They say, well, we're going to stay together because we have children or because of financial entanglement or because we have given up. It's never going to work anyhow with anybody, and this one is not too bad, so we might as well stay together. And I bet that even the relationships that we consider to be great, the two people really don't know each other. What goes on is that the two people decide not to interfere in each other's lives. They realize where the problems are. They stop discussing the problems. They live together. They cohabit together. And they don't talk about any serious issues that have to do with themselves. Maybe they individually don't any longer think about that ideal that they thought that they could be. They like die in relationship to the game that we can call becoming more conscious. They die to that possibility. So they live together and they enjoy to go out. You know how it is when you go out with your friends and have dinner in restaurants, or you go to a play and you sort of have fun and you tell jokes and you entertain yourself, you look at people and you criticize them and evaluate them, and you have a ball doing that and you can sort of be clever about it. And I think that that is true about 45%. So 95% of all people use relationships in that way. They come into conflict, half of them give up, and then the other 45% form a truce. And it's like in a boxing match, then you decide to take the gloves off, and each of you sit in the opposite corner and wave at each other. I mean, you don't engage anymore. Occasionally you will engage, but mostly you already know what the outcome is going to be. And I mean, you just go through a particular ritual where you spend energy in this kind of erratic, sometimes violent way. And I think that most of you have particular issues that come up if you've been in a relationship for any more than 5 or 10 years. You know what the issues are. You know that when you begin to go down this tunnel, when you bring up that problem, you know what the outcome is going to be. That is, that it's going to flare up, you're going to shout, you scream at each other, then one of you is going to storm out, slam the door, go for a walk, get drunk, whatever your solution is. Then you come home, you don't talk about it, you go to bed, And you wake up the next morning, maybe you begin to talk, maybe not. And after a few hours or days, you don't talk about what happened. You just know that that's unresolved and you go on with your lives. So now that's 95% of relationships. Now there is another 5% that do relationships differently. And it is towards that opportunity that we would like to address ourselves. So what happens in those 5% of the relationships? What is it that would make it worthwhile to use relationships differently? And I think that we could look at what would be a different way of doing it from the way that you're doing it now. So what are some ideas that you have? What are some of the things that come up for you as questions? What is it that goes on in a relationship that you feel is okay, perhaps, or isn't? But let's say that it's okay, and yet it's boring, or, gee, is that all there is? Isn't there more than this? There is more than this. Now, how do we go about it? What are some of the problems, and how do we deal with those problems, and what are some alternative ways of dealing with it? What do you think, Juana?
A question that comes to my mind, though, is I noticed that like an issue will come up, we rarely talk about what's really going on. And because it's emotionally charged, I don't know how sometimes to get to the underlying principle where it's off. Do you have a way in which I can do that? Like if I keep asking myself questions or I use my partner in a way that if I see him as sort of the devil's advocate and I use him to ask me the questions so that I can get down to the underlying problem, then I can see what goes on with myself. But when I'm in the middle of the issue, I have a hard time doing that, and then he's also plugged in. What can we do about that? I see that as a problem, that we are not talking about what's really going on.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. In most arguments in relationships, the argument has nothing to do with what really goes on. How do we get to it? One of you suggested that we listen. That one exercise, if there is some problem that goes on, if you have a problem in your relationship that is unresolved, it may be worthwhile to listen, to make some agreement with yourself and your partner that for the next hour, you're not going to say anything. You're just going to listen. So that the person who has a problem, if there is a real issue, that you, to the best of your ability at that moment, and that may not be great. Your ability to listen may not be great. So just suspect that it might not. Like if your spouse is talking to you, you're very busy telling yourself how wrong she is, how unjust she is, from my point of view, or how wrong or unjust he is. And with some practice, there is a possibility that at some point your spouse will be able to say what it is that he or she has on their mind. And you will be able to hear what it is that he or she has on their mind. I think that in relationship, we have to begin to understand that the kind of work that we have to do in relationship is different from what we thought. If we for such a long time have thought that our purpose in relationship is to work over our partner, it's going to be a while before we can shift gears and begin to work on ourselves. Now, work on ourselves, one way would be to begin to learn to listen. So if you're having a problem with your spouse, you could decide one day to sit down on the couch and then maybe bring up, can you remember, sweetheart, last week we had a big argument. Let's talk about it now. And this is what I will do. I'll sit here and listen to you. So why don't you tell me what it really was that was going on with you? Now, let me forewarn you about some of the problems that will go through your head. You already know that you're right and that he or she is wrong, right? That's obvious. I mean, it hardly do I need say it, because you already know that. And for me to shift from having the point of view that he or she is wrong is going to be hard, and that's what my work on myself is about. That I allow myself to risk that awesome possibility that the other person is right. Or that the other person has an issue going on that you are not even aware of, and had you been aware of it, then it would have been okay to make that person right. which is perhaps what he or she needs. It may also be in the process of your spouse communicating about their problem that they realize that what they thought the problem was isn't the problem at all. So when we talk about this 5% of the total number of people who enter into relationships, what we talk about, techniques that they use, that is one technique. So when there are problems, one way to deal with them is to sit down and listen. All the things that I will suggest about relationships have to do with action, that we have to come up with a new recipe. Not for what the other person is supposed to do or be. That's easy. We already know that, and we could write it down. No, it is for what other opportunities or possibilities exist for me, other than the ones that I'm familiar with. So, for instance, one of the things that I may not be familiar with is sitting down and listening. Now, if I ask any one of you, do you sit down and listen to your spouse when he or she has a problem? You will say, yes, of course I do. So just imagine that you don't. Well, I know that I'm wrong. But as an experiment, just imagine that you don't. And then see what can come out of that new possibility. That would be one way of dealing with it. Yes, Ron?
What if as you're attempting to listen, you find that your spouse, they might not even know it themselves, but it's what you're getting from it is that they're not happy with themselves and they don't even love themselves. And so there's a problem with them being in that state, loving you. What then can you do?
See, this is perfect. That's one of the things that may come up in this new recipe on how do we be together. It is not only that you learn something about your spouse. What really goes on is that your spouse learns something about him or herself. And then now that you know that, and now that he or she knows that, there's a possibility of nurturing and supporting your spouse out of that, like find out how come you don't love yourself. What would it look like? What kind of a human being would you be? What kind of a wife or what kind of a husband would you need to be in order for you to love yourself? That would be something that would be possible for you to help each other with. So that you can begin to explore, like, for instance, if I say, well, in order for me to love myself, I have to make $1 million so that I can buy whatever, right? And my spouse might say to me, but sweetheart, I mean, if you made $35,000, that would be fine. So then I have an opportunity to look at the possibility that me as a provider, if that's one of the needs that I have in order to love myself, does not equate necessarily that I make $1 million. It could be that I have a regular job with a health insurance that pays for the bills and leaves enough over to go out and have dinner once in a while and go to the movies and buy a present, you know, every so often for the kids. But you see, those issues are not illuminated, not brought to light, till we take the opportunity to listen.
Sometimes when we're listening, we may see something in our mate, and they might not be listening to themselves. In other words, we might be getting that they aren't happy with themselves or that they don't love themselves. And what you talked about was very important. Sometimes they might not admit to themselves that this is true. And how do we overcome that? In other words, they're so busy trying to be right about the fact that they really do love themselves and they really are happy. How do you break through if you're getting something different?
I don't think that it is my job to break through what somebody else sees about themselves or don't see about themselves. What's true is that I can't be inside of you and really see what goes on. I've noticed that if the opportunity is generated where your spouse is given the opportunity to talk and you agree to listen, then over a relatively short period of time, the real issues will emerge so that we can begin to deal with the real problems. In relationships, the real problems are very seldom dealt with. So even though that at first it may appear as if your spouse is not telling the truth about what you see about his or her condition, over time that will emerge for them as their new reality and they will then be able to deal with it. I think that we immediately revert back to this, well, I'm going to show you what it is that's wrong with you. Well, we have tried that one, you know, ad nauseam. And I strongly recommend that that's not what you do. I know that you have better insights about your spouse, that is, that's what you say to yourself, than he or she has. I think it is better not to let them in on it till they discover it for themselves. Yes, Les?
So are you saying then that the challenge is to abandon that point of view? For instance, if my spouse drinks too much or smokes or takes drugs or acts the wrong way with the children, that my challenge is to just back off and let whatever flaw I see run its course, or what?
Very good question, Les. Well, let's take one of them about drinking too much. I don't know if you have ever had a relationship with an alcoholic. If you tell an alcoholic that they drink too much, do you have any idea what they will say?
They'll probably disagree.
They will disagree. Not probably, I guarantee you. They will disagree. And it is clear to me until the person recognizes that alcohol interferes in their life, I don't stand a chance. Oh, I can point it out on those rare moments when I'm calm and not upset about it or frantic about it or scared about it or whatever my reaction might be. I may point out to you, my spouse, and say, listen, I think that we should look at this drinking. Because yesterday you didn't go to work, and then you beat up our son John, and he has a broken arm, and he's in the hospital, and you don't remember. And you had been out drinking for 3 days, and maybe there's some relationship between the drinking. And then your spouse will say, well, I don't think so. And then it'll go on for how long it goes on, and hopefully your spouse will recognize there's some relationship between drinking and beating up my child or getting into an argument or making promises or whatever it is, missing work, whatever it is, or that we don't have enough money to pay our bills. But till the spouse sees it, I don't know that there's anything that you and I can do about it. I don't think so. Now, it sounds fatalistic, and I really think that it is so, that we are the only ones who can work on ourselves. And the moment that I begin to work on you, your defenses will come up. The moment that my defenses come up, that is, if you are going to tell me what it is that I'm doing wrong, and my defenses come up, what I've noticed about myself is that I can't hear what you're saying. Have you noticed that when you are in a relationship and your defenses are up and your spouse is saying to you, you don't hear what I'm saying, and you say, I hear what you are saying. And then they say, but you don't hear what I'm saying. And now you're fighting. And then, of course, 3 weeks later, when you're both bloody, you're talking about something that didn't have anything to do with what it was you talked about in the first place. No, I think that this idea about listening would be a vehicle where a person can begin to sit and talk about drinking and what effect that is has and what problems does it solve and is that a good solution. And little by little, they will come to recognitions about the price. And then they will either do something about it or not. And like with drinking, with alcohol, which is probably one of the most vicious diseases we have in this country, it spans all social stratas. I think that in that arena we can see that if the person is not themselves clear about it, there isn't anything that we can do to help them. Yes, Kirk.
In my own experience, having tried that experiment one time, I mean, having done that experiment one time, listening, I was amazed at the power of it. In the particular relationship I was in, it was way too late to reconstruct anything. I think we lost the intention to do that. But it was amazing to me how powerful that was in terms of communication, just listening. So that the that's another level of communication that often a lot of people, it seems to me, don't experience.
Yes, that's very good. Let me tell you something about communication, because communication has something to do with a particular result. It has not to do with the freedom to use four-letter words. Communication doesn't have to do with that. Some people think they were brought up to not use four-letter words. And now since they are modern, they are in the vogue of things. And in the vogue of things, it's all right to use four-letter words, right? So if I use four-letter words, I'm a good communicator. Another thing that is on the psychological agenda is that many of us have been taught that we can't express our anger. So if we can express our anger, if we can rant and rave, then we think that we are great communicators. That's not either communication. There's a very good test that I would recommend if you want to find out whether or not you're a good communicator. If your spouse says, this is what I want you to do, to show me that, you will know whether or not you're a good communicator. You will know by seeing whether or not you are, in fact, doing what it is that your spouse asks you to do. Because part of communication is clearly to listen. So in relationships, find out what it is that your spouse wants you to do. If there is a problem in the relationship, or if you want the relationship to expand, that is, that you're beginning to experience that it's kind of boring, if nothing happens and you always do the same, you sit down, then you could tell your spouse, I would really like you to do X. Or you could ask your spouse, which is one step ahead of the game, what is it that you would like me to do to make you feel even better about our relationship? And then he or she will say, well, what I'd like you to do is this. And then you will be able to tell whether or not you're a good communicator by seeing whether or not you are willing to do what it is that your spouse says. Yes, Ron?
What do you do when one of the sides stops communicating? And they don't want to rock the boat. And when you ask them, what would you like me to do to make the relationship better? They say, it's fine. And they're not conveying what they really want or what they really need.
I think that this exercise in listening would be a good way. There is another way. All of us know what it is that we need to do in order to be the person that's wonderful and great in a relationship. I think that there is not one person who doesn't know. But there isn't one of us who doesn't know that there are things that we could do that we are not doing. Begin to do those things. When I think that we are very negligent in our relationships, I think that that is why 95% of them are not working. It's because we neglect them. We take it for granted. We fall in love, and then we think that it works on cruise control. But it doesn't work on cruise control. It's something that we work on every day. And how do I work on a relationship? Well, I work on a relationship by becoming the kind of a person that I know that the other person wants me to be within the realm of what works for me. Let's say that I'm in a relationship with the person, and the way that the person knows that I love that person is that I beat them to pulp every night. That doesn't work. That's not congruent with the values that I have in life, and so I wouldn't do that. I think that it is important that we establish as a foundation a certain value, and the 5% who are working on their relationships and who use relationships as a support to work on themselves have a common value, that they have an agreement about what is it that works. And what is it that works in relationships goes back to what is it that works for me as a person. And what works for me as a person has to do with being honest. Now, being honest is tricky. Most people think that they are honest, and we are not. We tell white lies. Well, there is no such thing as white lies. There's lying, and then there's telling the truth. And if we don't tell the truth, then there is the possibility to atone for it, that is, to clean it up and then continue on. There is about being kind. So I be kind to myself. Now, one way to be kind to myself is to exercise my body, to eat nurturing food, and to get adequate rest, and so on. Living with integrity, that is, living with excellence, is some other way in which I can nurture myself and also nurture my relationship. Most people don't do that. I mean, look at your own relationships and see how often you make an ado out of cooking dinner. Whoever is the one who's cooking the dinner, it doesn't matter, it could be the husband or the wife. I mean, how often do you make some special effort? I mean, how often do you bring home flowers? How often do you bring home a nice bottle of wine? How often do you go and spend, you know how we are, most of us, we go and buy a bottle of wine and we pay $5 or $6. How often do you go and buy a bottle of wine and spend 20 because you are worth it and both you and your spouse are worth it? We don't do those things. And I feel that that is in the 5% where the relationships are nurturing, where people are actually growing together. They do things like that. They do little exercises with one another, like what is it that comes up over the dinner table at night? I mean, what comes usually up is, you didn't do such and such, and how come you forgot that, and why are you, and so on. It's possible to play little games, how to make my relationship work, one of which would be, for a month, every night across the dining room table, we find one reason to compliment each other. So we look back at the previous 24 hours and say, well, the way that you touched my hair, or the way that you smiled at me in the bathroom, or the way that you kissed me goodbye when you went to work, or whatever the reasons are, we can always find, or the way that you listened to me when I talked to you about the problem that I had yesterday at the office, the way that you listened to me really touched me. And so that every night you find a reason to look positively at your partner is another way in which to enhance the relationship. Now, we are so attuned to looking at each other's shortcomings that it would be a real effort to be willing to look at the positive aspects. I think it is important. One of the basic, one of the most fundamental things in relationships have to do with whether or not you are willing to live with a standard of excellence. Whoever you are, economically, education-wise, you know for you that there is a standard of excellence. And that is what we need to strive towards. And in the relationship, it shows up all the time. You see, relationship has to do with my relationship with me. Am I willing to come clean with myself about what goes on? That's the first thing. So honesty, if you ask me, is honesty important in a relationship? Absolutely yes. When it comes to another person, there is an opportunity to play a little game where those issues can be brought up. At least I would invite you to look at the possibility that sometimes you might decide to sit and talk about problems. When you feel really good, the kids are in bed and it's quiet, you feel close to your spouse. To sit down and say, listen, sweetheart, I have a couple of things that I'd like to talk to you about. How about it? Like the dinner that you cooked, can you remember 3 weeks ago? And I made those funny faces and I said it was because I had an itch. Well, it wasn't. What's really true is, nah, I don't want to hurt your feelings. You know, it's no good to say it right in the middle of there is your wife cooking the dinner, there's your husband cooking the dinner, and you come out into the kitchen and say, oh my God, not that again. You know, that doesn't work. I think that we have to be real sensitive with one another. There are feelings that we have that get easily hurt. The bottom line is that we are really insecure and we don't feel adequate. And for us to just run off and spill it all out as our spouse is standing there drying the dishes or cooking and sweating and like that, that I don't think that's appropriate. I think that when we talk about honesty, honesty is something that contributes to elevating the standard. Sometimes we use honesty to kill it. Now, honesty, I read at one point, the first thing is honesty. The second thing that is essential, an essential ingredient of honesty, is kindness. That it is no good that we use honesty without that ingredient of kindness. It doesn't work. So when we talk about honesty, now honesty with yourself, I think, ought to be absolute. Honesty in a relationship is honesty with kindness. Yeah, Kirk.
Only, you know, listening to what you talked about earlier before in the interrelationships of relationships, that in the early stages of a relationship, there's a very powerful feeling. There's an issue of power in relationships. And in the early stages, it's very empowering. We feel wonderful. We're willing to do anything. You know, our energy goes up, our enthusiasm, and whatever. And then there's, as the power disintegrates, then there becomes a power play out of maybe our own insecurity or our own lack of power or feeling of power, that we try to overpower the other person. Isn't there an issue of power in relationships too? And then what you're suggesting, it seems to me, is like there's another whole kind of power that's available as opposed to the kind that we typically think, needing to have power to keep the other person under control because we're not very powerful. And there's another way to create that power. It seems like that's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this issue of power, I think, is important. Usually we think of power in terms of power over somebody. And our lack of personal power manifests itself in that way. That if I'm not powerful, one way I can negate that is to dominate you. Now, if I can dominate you, then, well, that's a way of showing that I do have power, even though that I don't believe that I have power. Here's what I think about power. If I say I am willing to take charge, which is like I'm willing to assume power. I'm willing to take charge. And that could be in one particular area in the relationship. Could be about handling the kids or about handling making money. It could be about handling maintenance at the house. It could be about handling anything. I'm willing to take charge. In a relationship, I think that it is important when issues come up that one person takes charge. What do I mean by that? I mean that one person becomes accountable for the result. Now, it would be very smart if that role is shared. And what I mean by shared is that at any moment in time, it could be either spouse that takes charge or takes responsibility. Mostly what happens is that if I say, I'll take responsibility for that, that then it gets into be a power play. Well, wait a minute. I mean, why is it that yours and I like that? And then you're into an argument about it. I would recommend that when you distribute power, that power has to do with accountability. I take charge, you support me to be successful. I mean, what would be the point of you getting in the way so that we both fail? That's usually what happens, isn't it? I say that I'm going to take charge, which means I'm willing to be accountable for producing a particular result. Then you are going to show me that I'm not accountable by getting in the way. And then you can prove that I'm not accountable. Now, that's silly. I think that it is important if I say I am willing, or if you say you are willing, let us make it that way. You are willing to take responsibility. Then what I'm going to do is to support you to succeed. But one of the things that it does for me, it frees me up. As long as you, when you say that you're willing to take responsibility, that you are in fact accountable. And if you are not, that you then take responsibility for having promised being accountable, and you say, I didn't do it, I'm really sorry, and then either you will do it or you won't. My job, if you say that you're going to be accountable, is to support you in succeeding. It's not that I now take responsibility for you succeeding. I take responsibility for not getting in your way of succeeding and supporting you in succeeding. So I am there behind supporting you. That usually is not what happens. Power becomes a struggle. Well, I think that that's silly. In my relationship, if you say that you will take care of the money, well, I want to see that we have enough, that there's some for the savings, that we don't squander it, that, you know, 3 months later you say, you know, I'm sorry. Yeah, I said that I was going to take responsibility for the money, but I didn't balance the check account. We are overdrawn by $15,000. I don't know how it happened, and I'm real sorry about it, and I'll never do it again, and, you know, like that. And that's usually what happens. So this about power, it can be different in that 5% of the relationships where they're working on it, because power has to do with accountability. So if you say that, sweetheart, I'm going to take care of the cars. I don't want to come in and find the car when I'm late for work and there's no gas left in, and you say, oh, by the way, sweetheart, I forgot. That's not being accountable. So power has to do with accountability. Then there isn't any problem. In a simple way, I can say that we need to be needed. We need to be wanted. Coming out, for most people, out of a sense of inadequacy, which is why we talk about our better half, that we come out of some sense of inadequacy. We are very frail as human beings, and we need to be loved, and we need to be nurtured, and we need to be popular. We need to matter. And usually we look outside of ourselves to find reassurance, which could stem from something that happened in childhood, could stem from whatever. I suggest that we do it differently. If I need to know that I matter, I have in a relationship an infinite number of opportunities to manifest that I matter. I can cook a great dinner. It's like we think that we have to go out and do something really extraordinary. Relationships are such a terrific arena where we can show up as wonderful human beings. We can buy flowers, we can cook dinners, we can bring surprises, and it doesn't have to do with spending a lot of money. Or we can sit and share a book. We can write little notes. I mean, there are so many opportunities to make ourselves be the kind of a person that we say we need to be. That is, we need to be popular, or we need to be valued, or we need to be somebody who is thoughtful, or we need to be thought of in whatever ways. Well, in a relationship, we have the opportunity to do that.
Which is empowering.
And that empowers us, yes. We don't get power from power over somebody. It's a backwards way of looking at power. We think that power has to do with power over somebody. Power really has to do with self-discipline. Yes, Les?
All of those wonderful things aside, I know many people who have been through the ringer with relationships 3 and 4 times and more. And towards the end, when the painful part comes, they swear that they'll never do it again. And then they do. Why do we always keep coming back for more? What is it about relationships that seems so necessary for us to have one?
I think relationships offer an arena in which we can see ourselves. I mean, I can only tell whether or not I'm a great father by having children. And in my relationship with children, it shows up whether or not I'm a great father. I can only see that I'm a great husband or wife by being in an intimate relationship. There it will show up whether or not I'm a great husband or wife. Of course, we end up by marrying the wrong person who doesn't appreciate our talents. But if we have done it 3 or 4 or 5 times, then we know 1 or 2 things. Either we are not a great husband or wife, or we have the tendency to choose the wrong person. Right? So we ought to replace it and get a dog. Then see whether or not we are a good master for a dog. I think we have a need to see ourselves. And I think that that is a need that, again, is philosophically deep. I think it has to do with this emergence of a possibility of being conscious. I think that consciousness is manifesting itself. It's through this phenomenon that we call human beings. And the extension of that is now, how do we do it? Here we have the possibility of being conscious. Well, I can't see myself. I show up in relationship too. Like, the sun is always there. The enjoyment of the sun shows up in my ability to experience enjoyment of the sun. There isn't any enjoyment of the sun until somebody is there enjoying the sun. The sun just is. And it's like there is a tree in the field, and it casts a shade. The enjoyment of the shade doesn't exist until I lie in the shade. And I say, oh, how nice it is to lie in the shade. And now suddenly the shade that the tree casts causes enjoyment. We need relationships to see ourselves as husbands, as lovers, as a kindred spirit, as wives, as mothers, as fathers. We need relationships to see ourselves as children, as brothers and sisters, and so on. And I think that it is a need that exists in us deep down. So we are like driven, like the sexual drive, that need to procreate is there, and it shows up that we get attracted to the complementary sex. Unfortunately, we are only now beginning to learn to see that there is a possibility to use this phenomenon, relationship, as a vehicle to further expand in such a way that we become the kind of human beings that we secretly know that we want to be. What mostly comes up for us when we talk about relationships, what we want to look at are all the problems that we have, how difficult it is. And the favorite topic, of course, is what's wrong with our spouse. That's always a conversation that we carry on with ourselves. And whenever we can solicit an audience, we engage in our favorite dialogue, which we have been engaging with ourselves about for years, which has to do with all the faults that exist in the relationship, all the ways in which we are misunderstood, all the shortcomings. I would like to offer some hope that there is another possibility. I feel that we overlook our own role in relationship. We are so wrapped up in what it is that we want and what it is that we expect that we don't give ourselves the real opportunity that we have in life, which is to become the kind of a person that we want to be. I feel that the real hope for us in relationship is that we use that opportunity to be the greatest wife or husband that we can be. that we begin to look at what it is that we can give rather than what it is that we want. But if we began to look at being the kind of a husband or wife, if we began to focus from that vantage point of what it is that we can give, that that might shift what it is that goes on in relationship, what might shift what it is that we perceive that goes on in a relationship, and in that way, you know, make little changes. Because that's one of the things that I have an image about as a father, one of the things that I think has some value, some intrinsic value, both for me and for him. Or to sit down with one of my kids and read a book. And I wonder if, when I say that, whether or not you are motivated to look from that point of view rather than from the point of view that we are most familiar with, which is, what's wrong with our spouse? Why don't you try this? I suggest, as an experiment, as a new opportunity for you to have some experiences that you may not have had for a while, why don't you do some of the things that ideally you know that you would be doing had you been with the right person? Why don't you do them anyhow? I mean, who knows? Who knows what might happen? Let's say if you for a week became the kind of wife or husband that you have always wanted to be, that you do the kind of things that that ideal person would be doing. Now, that could be buying flowers, cooking wonderful meals, having candles at the table, buying a more expensive wine than you know that you really should, but it's a special occasion. You are being the kind of a husband that you've always wanted to be. So you are doing the kind of things that that ideal husband is doing. So you buy a good bottle of wine, stick a rose in the bag when you bring it home. Whatever it is for you, and each one of you knows what it is for you. As an experiment, be the kind of an ideal spouse and do the kind of things that that ideal spouse would be doing. You might share the idea with your spouse. So let's say that you say to your spouse, listen, sweetheart, I've decided to be the ideal husband. How about it? Would you like to try with me and see if you could be the ideal wife to see what happens? Just see if we could, you know, like in theater, we just pretend that we are the ideal people. We are the ideal couple, so we begin to do the things that ideal couples do. Just see what happens. I think within that possibility, there exists a whole new realm of experiences that you may discover would give you much more a sense of health and happiness and joy and satisfaction in your lives, and will bring your standard in life way up there where you have always wanted to operate. Could you only have found the right partner? Maybe the partner you have is it.
ISA would like to thank Ole and the ISA graduates who made this series possible. Please be reminded that reproduction of these programs in any manner without authorization is unlawful. Thank you for listening.